Okay, yeah, my name is Joseph Kovano from University of Iowa, and my focus of interests are Hill-Robertson effects, the interaction, linkage, selection, finite populations, and more recently the evolution of gene expression. But today I will just say a few things about the Hill-Robertson effect. And I could summarize the complete hour or hour and a half by saying that the units of the Hill-Robertson effect, the classical units of the Hill-Robertson effect, have to change. But before showing some results, I want to define what I mean by the Hill-Robertson effect and what actually Hill and Robertson did and prevented. Hill and Robertson, in this paper in 1966, focused their attention on the probability of fixation of a beneficial mutation in the presence of another beneficial mutation in the population. And it was very specific. It was a study of two locus with two possible beneficial mutations, but both beneficial mutations already present in the population. Of the very long paper, 11 or 12 figures, this figure basically represents what they the main conclusion of their study. And with some help, this is the annotated figure. Basically, this figure shows the probability of fixation of a beneficial mutation A that was already present in the population when a second beneficial mutation B is introduced into the population for different selection coefficients for the mutation B and for different linkage levels. For instance, it's shown that when beneficial mutation B has basically no selection coefficient or very, very small selection coefficient, the presence of this second mutation has no effect on the probability of fixation of the first beneficial mutation, probability of fixation of capital A. However, when the selection coefficient starts increasing for this second mutation, the probability of fixation of the first one, of capital A, decreases. And decreases when stronger, when linkage is increases too. When linkage is complete with recombination and C equals zero, the probability of fixation of the beneficial mutation A decreases very substantially. But when recombination is high, the highest in those simulations that they did with very small population size in those years, with the highest possible recombination rate, they did observe also a reduction in the effectiveness of cell in the probability of fixation of A. This is what they reported. Basically, this is the summary of their study. They also investigated negative linkage disequilibrium, how negative linkage disequilibrium is broken. But the idea here, and the idea of the Hill-Robertson effect as we understand today, is this one, the ones that basically they define in the paper. The segregation of a selected mutation in a population with finite population size and partial or complete linkage will decrease the probability of fixation of the other mutations, of the other beneficial mutations. And they define this observation as a reduction in the effective selection intensity. They actually define this as a reduction in the product of the effective population size N and the selection coefficient S. A reduction in the effectiveness of selection of the overall system. Yes?
So, on this figure, this line goes back up.
That yes.
Is an artifact?
No. No, they investigated this, this basically going up. And this is not necessarily the Hill-Robertson effect, as we understand. But they also show that when you increase selection even more, then the effect is reduced again.
If there's no recombination, one of the two wins, no? I mean, you can't have both fixed, no?
Yes, but it's Yes. For a zero recombination, this increases basically to a point here, this increases to a point here. But now we understand this also in terms of, for instance, if we have, we keep in mind the results of background selection or hitchhiking. We know that with very, very strong selection coefficients, basically the consequences on other mutations is reduced. And the maximum effects usually are obtained when we compare intermediate selection coefficients. Yes.
But what is N here? So they can also occur on the same genotype, I suppose.
Yes. These were simulations in 66 with very, very small population size. Basically, they were investigating 32 diploid individuals. Even though they say they write weak selection, well, the selection coefficient in these simulations is not that weak for many for most standards. But in any case, drift is also was very important. The bottom line here is that this is basically the strict definition of the Hill-Robertson effect, what they actually propose. Linkage between segregating mutations will generate a reduction in the effectiveness of selection of the complete system. And we can understand that as the interaction between selection and linkage will reduce the efficacy of selection. The product NES, efficacy of selection only. The problems appear when you read Felstenstein's paper on the advantage of recombination 8 years later. Because Felstenstein basically explained what the results presented by Hill Robertson meant. And he presented the results of Hill and Robertson, saying that the reduction in the efficacy of selection is caused by mutations interfering with each other. This word interference between selected mutations was used first by Felstenstein when describing the Hill and Robertson result. And he proposed that this could be basically interpreted as equivalent to a reduction in the effective population size. Instead of describing the result in terms of the efficacy of selection only, he describes the results in terms of the reduction in the effective population size. And this is not a small detail. Yes?
So I really don't understand that, because there are really two effects going on, right? Mm-hmm. When these alleles at low frequency, mm-hmm. so they are just entering the population, and one can ask, what is the probability of establishment of this allele without it, right? Mm-hmm. And on this level, the population side doesn't really enter, mm-hmm. right? So it's all drift, but we can just think of it as a branching process, and the constraint on the total number of individuals doesn't really enter. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that there is no recombination, and to the extent that these two alleles are likely to sit on different genotypes, they're just competing clones, but they're not really competing, right?
Yeah.
So the only time when they start interfering is when fluctuation effects become basically negligible, and we really enter the fixation regime, and we just have two exponentials with different rates now taking over a significant fraction of the population, mm-hmm. but the quicker population that enters just as log n, so it's not really fluctuation effect, which it's not really drift that you would want to describe by effective population.
Yeah, completely true. Hill and Robertson basically here kind of cheated in the way that they didn't introduce mutations 1 over n, at frequency 1 over n. They investigated the effect of mutations entering into a population at a high frequency, in some way. And basically, they escape some of these stochastic processes. And basically, they have many figures comparing, looking at the results when the two frequencies are high, one frequency is high, the other frequency is low, etc., etc. But in almost all cases, except for the very for the cases where the mutations enter in the population 1 over 2n in the results, in almost all cases they observe a reduction in the probability of fixation of the original mutation, of the mutation with the highest frequency already in the population. But yes, it's correct that they do not do the classical forward simulations where you have one mutation already present in the population and then one appearing at very, very low frequency. No, basically they introduce the mutation already at 20%, 10%, 30%, etc., which maybe is not fair, but this is what they did at that time.
You agreed that what Felsenstein did was essentially confusing two coupling constants in the system.
It's possible.
The diffusion yes. constant and the other is a coupling term between two selection.
Yes, I completely agree. And that's why sometimes I say that this is the problems associated with the concept of the Hill-Robertson effect were created by Felsenstein, how he interpreted the results or the sentences associated with the results. But in any case, this is what was published in 74. He said, well, we can understand the process as a reduction in the effective population size. This was a kind of a convenient proposal, because by reducing the effective population size, obviously you reduce the efficacy of selection that was described by Hill and Robertson, the NES. Also has another consequence. Not sure it's a good one or a bad one, but has another consequence that predicts a reduction in the level of polymorphism, neutral polymorphism, overall polymorphism in the populations. And this is what can create some problems when we discuss the Hill-Robertson effect in the strict sense of a reduction in the efficacy of selection, or in this more general sense, Felsenstein sense, of a reduction in the effective population size that will create a reduction in the efficacy of selection, but also predicts a reduction in the level of polymorphism n multiplied by mutation rate. And in this general sense is where background selection, hitchhiking, pseudo-hitchhiking, these models of a strong selection that focus their effect on the results on polymorphism could be interpreted as being part of the Hill-Robertson effect. But I wanted to, since last week we discussed what we understand as Hill-Robertson, I wanted to be sure that we have the clear idea of what actually Hill and Robertson meant and what some, including myself, understand now as a very, very general Hill-Robertson effect focusing on NE. And in this general term, background and hitchhiking, all this would be included in this term. Mm-hmm.
And all of this is done with assumption that the recombination rate is too slow to compete with the other two numbers.
Absolutely.
NS and N. So for practical purposes, we just have competition of clones.
Yes.
There's no recombination.
Yeah. Or with very low recombination rate. Yes, yes. And this is actually indirectly the focus of my presentation. Okay. With this idea and exactly what we were saying just half a minute ago, with this idea of that linkage, interaction between linkage selection in a finite population can generate a strong reduction in the effectiveness of in the effective population size. With this idea in mind, most models study the Hill-Robertson effect or reduction in the effectiveness on the effective population size in terms of large units, in terms of the species with more or less recombination, sexual versus asexual, or chromosomes with more or less recombination, the Y chromosome, extreme cases, or even in terms of large chromosomal regions with a strongly reduced rates of recombination compared to regions with high recombination. A few examples of these general idea of the classical idea of the Hill-Robertson effect. in terms of large units. For instance, when we compare a species with more recombination and less recombination. For instance, Arabidopsis lyrata and Thaliana, the first outcrossing, the second highly selfing, not with zero recombination, but definitely maybe with one order of magnitude reduced recombination compared to the lyrata. And we can investigate whether or not we do see the predictions of the Hill-Robertson effect by studying the level of polymorphism, this general Hill-Robertson effect. And indeed, we observe a reduced level of polymorphism, of neutral polymorphism, in the species where we we expect reduced level of recombination. Again, the idea is that the more recombination, the larger the effective population size, under the general idea of that.
This is always where I get very nervous, right? To study these models, and these models that we've discussed so far are actually quite straightforward, I think. Mm-hmm. So to study any of these effects is very sort of straightforward calculation. Mm-hmm. But now we jump to some real organisms that mm-hmm. are living in the wild, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're saying we're expecting to see this. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if we're expecting to see this.
Absolutely.
Any other effects,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All else being equal. I forgot that.
But is there some reason to believe that all else is roughly equal?
Absolutely not. That's why these are some examples that we can use, but I will make exactly this argument, that it's unfair to study things that are that different. Mutation rate could be different. Basically, anything that you can imagine could be different between a species. A slightly better example would be this one, when we compare several pairs of fresh water snails, when we have a sexual and asexual clade, and we have these basically these pairs in repetition. In this case, I think that they have four pairs, and this would be slightly better because, well, we have four repetitions, and the overall level of polymorphism for sexuals, again, is higher than asexuals. This is slightly better, but again, many other things can be going on in this species. Of course, yes.
General, I have a general question and I've understood about this. So this understanding of, say, background selection in terms of NE, mm-hmm. so where does it break? Because in judgment simulations, if selection is very hard, then a little frequency distribution stays the same, pi drops. Mm-hmm. So it looks like lower NE. But if selection is, if there are many weakly deleterious alleles, then allele frequency distribution also shifts. Mm-hmm. So it looks like just formulating it as lower NE is not very helpful. Mm-hmm. So what is the limit of this approximation?
I'm just reporting the data, but I'll be showing you the results in regions of high recombination. Basically, where I think it's the area of interest here. When we compare this classic idea, a strong reduction in recombination, predicted reduction in effective population size, we can study that by investigating levels of polymorphism. But this approach has problems. When we compare different species, obviously there are many problems. When we compare chromosomes, as in this case in Drosophila, we can compare the second and third chromosome in Drosophila melanogaster and Drosophila simulans, chromosomes with an overall high rate of crossing over and recombination rate, and we can compare these results to the results for the fourth chromosome in Drosophila that is assumed to have very little recombination, not zero, but very, very little recombination. Again, we do observe higher levels of polymorphism in the chromosomes with high recombination rate relative to a chromosome without or with very little recombination rate. Again, congruent with the idea of a reduction in effective population size. But again, now we are in the same species. Many things now, we are closer to all else being equal. But it's possible that the different recombination environments, and in this case, the fourth chromosome that is attached to a heterochromatic area, is also possible that we have a different mutation rates, etc. A slightly better approach, the large chromosomal regions. This is a classical and most likely the first analysis of this general Hill-Robertson effect in Drosophila, where Chuck Langley and collaborators are investigating the telomere of the X chromosome. The telomere is the X chromosome. The X chromosome basically will go in that direction to the right. And the recombination rate in terms of crossing over the telomere in the telomere of the X chromosome is zero and increases gradually and then basically plateaus to the right. And combining several studies, they reported that the level of neutral polymorphism was extremely reduced in the areas at the very telomere of the chromosome, extremely reduced in the areas with almost no crossing over, and increase also gradually, paralleling the increase in recombination rates on the crossing over rates. Again, with the idea of the more recombination, the larger the effective population size, and the larger the level of polymorphism. We can investigate that relationship between recombination rates and levels of polymorphism instead of spatially, but just by plotting the relationship between recombination and polymorphism. And this was published in Nature by Began and Aquador. I think that Began will be here next week or in a few days. And they reported a very nice positive relationship with very few genes. A more modern interpretation of this study is shown here and published 2-3 years ago now, when we do see a very strong relationship between recombination rates in terms of crossing over and the level of polymorphism, this time corrected by the possible changes in mutation rates associated with differences in recombination rates. Very nice positive relationship. What I wanted to point out here is that, sure, there is a very nice positive relationship, but we do observe a high level of variation in terms of levels of polymorphism, even in areas with high recombination. That is not predicted by the models of a strong selection, hitchhiking background, etc. However, almost all the signal generating this positive relationship between recombination rate and levels of polymorphism and possibly NE is caused by the areas with extremely reduced levels of recombination. Using this figure here from a paper, recent paper from Began and Langley from Davis, showing the levels of nucleotide polymorphism along the X chromosome in Drosophila simulans in blue. They also plotted here the distribution of crossing over along the X chromosome in green, and in red basically the level of nucleotide divergence between simulans and Drosophila melanogaster. It's quite clear here to main patterns. One, that most of the signal generating the relationship between polymorphism recombination rate is the result of the extreme regions with very reduced recombination rate. And the other is that even for high recombination rates, we have a high level of variation. This same conclusion can be obtained by checking a figure that you've seen last week, I think twice and 10 days ago too, from Petrov's lab, where basically they represented the level of polymorphism along the chromosome 12 in Drosophila melanogaster, where the reduction in polymorphism are basically associated to the two extremes, the centromere and the telomere of the 12 chromosome. Again, the relationship, the general relationship recombination polymorphism is due to the areas with extreme reduction in recombination rates. And with these ideas, basically, these are the ideas associated with the classical Hill-Robertson effect. The classic Hill-Robertson effect does assume large scale units, either a species, chromosomes, or large chromosomal regions with extremely reduced rates of recombination. And this is the standard approximation to the study of the Hill-Robertson effect. We have regions of low recombination rate with severe reduction in recombination rate that is predicted to show reduction in effective population size. And then we have areas with high recombination that many assume to have equivalent effective population size. The forces associated with the Hill-Robertson effect, or background selection, or hitchhiking, that usually predict reduction in effective population size due to linkage and selection. Basically, these forces disappear in these areas of high recombination rate. And this is the classical idea, large units associated to the effective population size.
But is it clear that or, I mean, there could be still lots of interference on small
scales? That's exactly what I'm going to say. But this, what I wanted to make is that this is the general idea. We all read many papers in population genetics are saying we are going to use only genes in regions of high recombination because these areas are assumed not to be influenced by linkage effects, by hitchhiking, background, pseudo-hitchhiking, etc., etc. This is a kind of a sentence that you can put in all population genetics papers to be able to apply some statistics. Okay, and this is exactly what I agree with you, because we know that this is not likely the case, because we know that most of the mutations that could potentially generate Hill-Robertson effects are weak and are mutations under weak and moderate selection, because these are the ones that will be segregating the population. But also, we know that they are not randomly distributed across the along a chromosome. We know that they are likely clustered, physically clustered. We know that they will be clustered in exons, will be clustered in regulatory regions. Yet they will be present. There will be many. They will be present in the population, and they will be very close to each other, with very little recombination rate between them, increasing the probability of Hill-Robertson effects. Of course, at a very local scale, but that's the idea. And this is basically what I propose. The idea that in these areas of high recombination, we should not assume equivalent NE. We should not remove the possibility of Hill-Robertson effects. But we should maybe think in terms of variable NE, basically following the density of the clustering of mutations under selection that we know most likely occurs along a chromosome, because we know that there will be clustering in exons or clustering in regulatory regions, etc.
So the one thing that maybe this is standard knowledge that I'm talking about is that modeling this as just local variations in NE is actually sensible. I mean, it's not so obvious.
Almost all the tests of selection assume that NE is the same in regions of high recombination. And the whole point of this talk is that most likely this is completely false. We have to, and I think the last sentence of the last slide is that we have to model variation in NE associated with local Hill-Robertson effects. And if not, we can have
Well, the question is actually more, it's before that. The question is, can you model these local linkages, the effects of these local linkages by just letting NE fluctuate along the variable chromosome? I mean, is there some simple argument why that is a reasonable way to
call it then? We should, absolutely. We should include variation in NE associated with clusterings, most likely. There is no reason not to, only a computational reason, but not to model not to model a complete chromosome. Yes.
To put the question in another thing, if you say it's a fluctuation in NE, that would mean if I look, for example, at the spectrum of neutral polymorphism, I would just see a reduction or enhancement or fluctuations in the amplitude of that spectrum, mm-hmm. but not in the shape.
Yes.
But if there, for example, there are sweeps going on or something, then the shape would change as well. So that there must be something else but a variation in the E. I guess that was...
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think that that's exactly the point. If we are looking for signatures of positive selection, for instance, we should not use as a null neutrality and independence. We should use as a null what we know most likely is the reality, that we have some weakly or moderately deleterious mutations clustered across the genome, generating differences in effective population size. And if we can reject that null, for instance, and we can observe changes in the shape of the frequency distribution, not explained by this local Hill-Robertson effect, then we could.
Sorry, I really don't understand why ME is the relevant parameter here. Because ME is important. Mm-hmm. Okay, it is a conventional description of drift.
Yes.
But why is interference between two genotypes mm-hmm. at present at small frequencies, mm-hmm. why is that changing the drift? They're not going to interact.
Well, they are.
They don't see each other until they enter mm-hmm. the population at a substantial fraction, mm-hmm. right? Which basically means that, for example, when we talk about polymorphism, mm-hmm. we should distinguish between SNPs that are present at high frequency or at low frequency. Mm-hmm. And expect interference among Hill-Robertson mm-hmm. interference among high frequency SNPs. Mm-hmm. But is that what we are?
I completely agree, and that's why I focus on weakly selected mutations. That's
why not just say the population size is fixed and talk about the variation in
the drift effect. Well, because if we think in terms of difference S, we have a tough time checking predictions. For instance, if we think in terms of the consequence of NE, we can study for in levels of polymorphism, because that in some way is linked to the prediction of changes in any. And it's a useful, maybe comfortable assumption, yes.
I don't think mm-hmm. It's entirely up to us to mm-hmm. decide. You know, it's true that very often we're interested in a ratio of selection and drift, mm-hmm. which is why we talk about anti-stop. Mm-hmm. But once you start thinking about multiple loci with different strength of selection, mm-hmm. then, if I want to compare S and for that matter M at different loci, mm-hmm. then I have to know what I'm keeping fixed mm-hmm. and what I'm not keeping fixed. And the drift on two loci is the same. It's selection that's there.
Yes, but
that's essentially what was Felsenstein's.
Yes.
Error, right?
Yes, or his interpretation. However, his interpretation was useful because, for instance, if we want to study the consequences of this interference on adjacent neutral sites, reducing the level of polymorphism, we can approximate that by thinking in terms of effective population size. And not that. Not that.
If I was more 93, she shows that you can, each selection is hard enough, and this is why I wanted to follow up on this question. So you have F0. F sub 0 is a fraction of mutation free chromosomes. So everything, time to fixation, nucleotide diversity, everything changes by the multiplier. So you can model everything by changes in NE to predict all of your statistics. But this approximation breaks in case of very weak selection against the deleterious alleles. And I think the important question is not whether we definitely can talk about in terms of NE if selection is hard enough.
As long as we look single locus at a time?
No. If you know that variation you analyze is neutral, and you focus on neutral variation, and you think that background selection is what is changing your heterozygosity, analytical solution which shows changes in E, Griswold simulation, and so forth. However, this breaks if selection against good utilitarian lead is very weak. And then the frequency distribution starts changing. So I think the important question is whether we're still in the regime where this approximation is better. Or we're in the, because what's happening as soon as deleterious alleles have non-zero chance to fix, then this approximation breaks. And I don't know what happens actually in the fly, so whether we can still work in this any approximation and selection is hard enough or not.
I want to understand, because it's very important, right? You're saying that if you can make a model where you actually have real recombination along a chromosome, and you have neutral mutations along the chromosome, so there is strong linkage between nearby neutral sites and less linkage between sites further away, okay? And then you're saying the whole spectrum of polymorphism is a function of, let's say, the recombination rate, the mutation rate, and the population size. You can all stick that into variations in NE.
No, the situation is this. Yeah. So you have NE goes linearly into nucleotide diversity, transcription, and so forth. So what is shown is that you have a single parameter, which basically multiplier. In case of background selection, I'm not saying in case of hitchhiking. So the basic idea is that NE is number of chromosomes which you actually pass to next generations and so forth. So all chromosomes which have deleterious alleles would not contribute to NE, because eventually they will be eliminated from the population.
So, but we're not talking about deleterious mutations, right? I mean, we're talking about interference
between segregating mutations.
Between segregating mutations at nearby position because they're linked, mm-hmm. so they're less likely to be recombined in guys that are further apart. Right?
And with this idea, this would basically apply to weakly or moderately. That is exactly where the background selection predictions basically go down. And that's the idea. With weak selection or with many weakly selected mutations, you can create, and that's the argument, you could create detectable Hill-Robertson effects at a very local level that cannot be predicted by the standard models of the hitchhiking or the background selection. That's
why would we expect interference at all in background selection? We only have to get rid of them.
Right. With weak selection, you do.
The point is that if you mention that you have no recombination, that's the easiest thing, right? So if you have no recombination, you have population, you have some class of chromosomes which carry deleterious mutations. So those will never get to fixation.
Right.
Right. So now, if you want to compute fixation, time to fixation, or level of polymorphism, you effectively have to exclude those chromosomes from effective population size.
Yeah, or so if you reduce the age of
the exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is why you
calculate
population size. Mm-hmm. You can compute all statistical values in this approximation.
Yeah, but it's basically inflating the average offspring number or something like that. But it's not interference between different mutations.
It is interference between deleterious mutations and your neutral.
But if you have the second one, for example, you just die faster. And if you, so I don't see how interference between deleterious mutations comes in here.
It's not interference between different deleterious mutations. It is interference between deleterious mutations and neutral variants.
And also...
Neutral variants, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but that's the drift. The point is if you have many, because when you add many... many deleterious mutations. The first one basically will reduce the effective population size and is predicted by the background background theory. But the second one basically enters into a population with a reduced effective population size with a smaller predicted effect. And basically the cumulative of all these many weakly deleterious mutations cause basically a reduction in the effectiveness of selection more and more.
Problem from these mm-hmm. two beneficial mutations that those want to reach fixation.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very different problem than either for a very strongly deleterious or a very strongly beneficial. Yes. Weakly beneficial or weakly deleterious, when we start adding many mutations, is when things begin to be complicated.
I think breaking negative disequilibrium, this is what you're talking about. And that's the difference.
I guess one can put it that way, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a different effect compared to, I think, what...
Okay.
So, Joseph,
yes.
Are you going to talk later about
any simulation results that would actually look only at weakly selected linked variants?
We can model it, yes. Yeah. Okay, then the idea was the classical units, larger scale units, and whether or not we could detect Hill-Robertson effect at a very local level in a real species, in, for instance, in Drosophila. To study that, basically, with Marty, we thought about three very naive predictions. What should we looking at to detect local Hill-Robertson effect, or Hill-Robertson effect at the level of single genes, or even at the level of within genes or across long exons? And we kind of proposed three very, again, naive predictions of this local Hill-Robertson effect. And we could think about others. One is that, well, if we have, all else being equal, a region of a chromosome where we have a gene that is only a very short exon, or a gene that is very basically a long exon. Clearly here, genes with very long exons or very long exons increase the probability of interference between any two mutations, and we do expect long exons to show a stronger local Hill-Robertson effect and reduce efficacy of selection. That's kind of one of the predictions. The other prediction would be that if we compare two genes with the same number of codons, or coding sequence in terms of length, but one gene with the introns in the middle, assuming that introns are less constrained than the exons. Genes with introns and genes without introns, we can assume that introns will basically increase the average recombination rate within the gene, will ameliorate Hill-Robertson effects, and we should detect a higher efficacy of selection in genes with introns compared to genes without introns. And a third prediction is heterogeneity along long exons. If we imagine a long exon, we have positions in the center being interfered by sites 5 prime and 3 prime relative to sites that are on the edge of this long exon, basically. And the idea would be that the center positions should show stronger Hill-Robertson effects and should show a reduced efficacy of selection. Okay, we had the predictions. Now, what should be studying to investigate these predictions? And we have two ideas. One, that weakly selected mutations are predicted to show more easily small differences in effective population size. I'll show you a few graphs of this idea later. But as soon as we introduce the idea of weak selection in Drosophila, we go to the idea of codon usage bias or codon bias. And I want to spend just two slides defining what I mean by codon bias and synonymous mutations. We know that in almost all species, synonymous codons are not used equally. And in almost all species, the frequency of some synonymous codons increase when these synonymous codons correspond to the most abundant tRNA. Synonymous codons that correspond to the most abundant tRNA is what we call the preferred codons. And this is the general idea of the translational selection hypothesis for codon bias or for studying synonymous mutations. The idea that selection favors those codons corresponding to the most abundant tRNAs. And we call these codons preferred codons. And one way to test this hypothesis, this translational selection hypothesis, is by investigating the predicted influence of selection when we study genes with different levels of transcription. Selection is predicted to be stronger in highly translated and highly transcribed genes relative to poorly translated and poorly transcribed genes. And we do observe a positive relationship between transcription and the frequency of the preferred codons in Drosophila, for instance, in this case, but we observe the same in yeast, in C. elegans, in Arabidopsis, and many other also multicellular organisms. These are relationships, nice genomic relationships, but once in a while I'm asked, well, whether or not there is proof that actually synonymous preferred mutation and unpreferred mutations actually have an effect. A proof in evolution is a tricky thing. But in this case, I usually I like to show this result by Carlini and Wolf and Stefan, when they basically replace preferred codons by unpreferred codons of the gene ADH, and then obtained transgenic Drosophila lines and studied the ADH activity. And the ADH activity actually decreased nicely with the number of unpreferred codons that they were incorporating. Basically, this would support the idea of the translational selection hypothesis. Excuse me?
What does activity mean?
In this case, was the activity of the ADH.
Yes, but what do they measure?
In this case, the ADH activity.
It's not quantity of the protein, is it? Or
this was weighted by the amount of protein. Actually, yes. This could not be explained by mRNA stability, or this could not. Yes.
But I think they measure enzyme activity.
Yeah, it's enzyme activity, the classic.
But then normalized by total protein, not,
yes.
Not
the proteins are the same, no?
These are proteins are the same, but the composition of the amino acid composition is not predict is should be the same, but under the translational selection hypothesis, having unpreferred codons increase the probability of not translating that codon accurately. The idea is that when translation occurs in this gene with 10 extra unpreferred codons, a fraction of these proteins in these codons could carry the wrong amino acid. That's it.
How do they measure protein level? By a very specific antibody that would be sensitive to such mistranslations, or by
I don't think so. I think it was just weight.
They just use like Lowry method to get total protein. They're not measuring how much ADH protein there is.
But this got total protein in the whole
system. Carlini told me that they actually tried to check whether or not the ADH amount was the same. And I think that they had the idea that was basically the same, but they didn't write it in the paper.
But that assay is just with an antibody. It's like a filter assay, like a dot plot kind of thing. But I don't think it's very quantitative.
Okay, but the thing is, okay, so if there are mistranslations, right, and the so then these mistranslations, most of the time, they cause the protein not to fold anymore, right? And if it doesn't fold anymore, then it's targeted for degradation.
Well, yes.
So once you, if you really normalize for the protein level, and you're, then you will start seeing effects.
For ADH levels, for total protein.
Total protein or any protein in your cell.
Indirectly.
Part of them would cause the protein not to fold. Others would just make conformational changes, and that you could.
And activity.
They would drop out. Of course, the total, the non-folders would drop out of when you normalize.
There's a very specific statement here, which is quite really interesting. I've never seen it. The statement is that 1/4 of the proteins do still fold, so that the antibody still recognizes them and thinks that there is a. That they're present, but they're not functional.
Yeah, this is what they reported in the paper.
But it also means that it's not about increasing the speed.
No, that's why this result would this result would support the idea of accuracy. Absolutely, yeah. The speed would be more would be associated with wrong folding and then degradation, etc. Yes. Yeah. I interpret these results as a support of the accuracy, translational selection in terms of accuracy.
Can you repeat what the preferred codon is?
Or basically, a preferred codon is defined as codons corresponding to the most abundant tRNAs. And most abundant tRNAs in unicellular organisms are kind of easy to study. In multicellular organisms, usually, they apply the proxy of the number of copies of a gene, basically being proportional to the level of the tRNAs. You can also, and many studies have defined preferred codons by doing the opposite approach, looking which codon increases with the level of transcription, and defining preferred codon as the one that increases with the level of transcription.
So which, so the preferred codon would be have mostly like a given nucleotide at the third position. So what is the correlation to
yes. nucleotide? Yeah, most preferred codons are either C or G endings. Yes, meaning that, for instance, for in humans or in organisms, when there is variation in nucleotide, in background nucleotide composition, that's a serious concern, because you always have the mixed effects of background composition and possible selection. Yes, absolutely. And you have to take into account that. Okay, I had the prediction. I told you that to study small differences in effective population size, the best is to study traits under weak selection. And I say that as a very general statement. But I wanted to show basically this in more quantitative terms. Here I'm showing you the expected relationship between the frequency of a preferred codon situation with weak selection, with increasing selection. And in this first line, you have the predictor relationship, frequency of preferred selection. And this second line, this lower line, is the predictor relationship when I reduce the effective population size by a factor, in this case of 50%. The point here is that if I investigate the difference between the frequency of preferred codons when I change an E by 75% or 50%, the maximum difference is expected to be observed in the range of very weak selection of NS1, NS2, NS3, etc. And the same conclusion can be obtained when we study, instead of the frequency of preferred codons, when we study the predicted level of theta of the level of variation. For instance, in this line, I plot the predicted relationship between theta or synonymous mutations and selection, in this case, to NES. And in this second line, I show you the predicted relationship between theta and selection when I reduce the effective population size by 50%. In this case, however, it's trickier because we can change, for instance, NE 50%, and gamma will go from 2 to 1. But it's not just a question of going from 2 to 1 in the same line, because now that we have reduced effective population size by half, the maximum theta is also half. That's why when I go from one level of polymorphism to the predicted level of polymorphism when I reduce effective population size by 50%, basically I go from this point to this point, not just increase. I'm just not reducing gamma only, but I'm reducing gamma and the predicted maximum theta too. The bottom line again is that when I study the difference between thetas when I change effective population size, the maximum differences will be observed in the range of very weak or weak selection again. Okay.
What you're saying about this part, so you have actual minimum almost at zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Which one?
Yeah. So in the last plot.
This one?
Yes. Well, yeah, last one. Down there.
Yeah.
The theta over theta sub zero.
Mm-hmm. No. This 0.5.
Right. So, but if it's almost zero, then you have no negative selection, right? So you're actually fixing everything.
Yeah. This would be the neutral case. If I reduce the effective population size of a neutral mutation, I go to 50% in this case. Yes, that's the case. Okay, now we had the predictions. We had the idea that we wanted to study a trait under weak selection, and that codon bias was, or synonymous mutation was, the perfect type of mutation to study. And then, to study a possibility of local Hill-Robertson effect, we apply a kind of twofold approach. One, with computer simulations, trying to mimic evolution with as close as possible with parameters of selection, recombination, and drift, as similar as possible to a case when it's in Drosophila. And also we did a genomic analysis. The genomic analysis. The computer simulations, I can go fast with the results.
So this is purifying selection?
These simulations were mimicking a codon bias synonymous mutation effect, where we have mutations that go from an unpreferred to a preferred with weak positive selection, and from a preferred to an unpreferred with weak deleterious effects. Yeah, it's a mutation selection drift equilibrium case.
So what is gamma?
Gamma would be defined as the product, effective population size and selection in terms of, in these simulations, 2NS. And the result is of the computer simulations for the three predictions, basically all qualitatively agree with the predictions. For instance, we can focus in this area when we have a gamma of 2.5, the level of polymorphism in a selected area with an area under weak selection mimicking codon bias situation, and increasing the L, the number of sites, basically reduced the observed theta. We also observed a reduction in theta on adjacent neutral sites. The second prediction, that adding neutral sites in the middle of sites under selection would ameliorate the Hill-Robertson effect at this very local level, also was observed in the simulations, where here I'm showing you the frequency, the observed frequency of preferred codons when basically there is no spacing between the two regions of 500 nucleotides, with more spacing, more spacing, more spacing, etc. Qualitatively, again, agreeing with the idea that it could be possible to observe these local effects with parameters similar to Drosophila. And when basically we simulated the case of heterogeneity with a long stretch of sites under selection, we did observe that the central area show reduced level of reduced frequency of preferred codons relative to the lateral areas. Sorry. These were computer simulations.
Just to clarify,
yes. So
the Hill-Robertson, maybe you said it, but the Hill-Robertson effect is now between these weakly selected...
Yes, with many weakly selected mutations, yes.
But so there's no interaction with other changes, like
strongly
change the amino acid.
No, in this case,
within this class of changes that would be...
Yeah. As a first approximation, 6 or 7 years ago, the first approximation was, let's investigate whether or not weakly selected mutations alone could create some Hill-Robertson effect. That was the idea. And the idea was not to predict quantitative effects, it was just qualitatively to see whether or not we could detect that effect. But the next step was obviously to study the genomes, because we had the Drosophila genome, and we could investigate the frequency of preferred codons in the genome. Yes.
Question for the simulations. You have reversal mutations between the preferred and the unpreferred.
Yeah, in this case, yes.
So in some sense, you're combining two effects. You're combining this sort of apparent reduction in ME due to sort of background selection, mm-hmm. as well as, that to say, you have that effect occurring when you have a segregating deleterious or unpreferred codon. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also possibly combine it with the competitive interactive effect between two sites, say neighboring sites, that have each acquired a low frequency mutation towards a preferred codon, right? So. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that you're, I wouldn't use the word conflating, but you're certainly combining two very different types of interactions. That's to say, the background selection and the sort of the interaction among two mutations that are both trying to fix.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have the complete mixture of weakly positive, weakly deleterious with high levels of linkage and with very loose linkage, the ones that are more distant, yes.
But in the parameters you use, is it likely that you have in your population two clones competing with each other for going to fixation?
Complete clones. No, all these simulations were... all these results are based on very high levels of recombination, the highest levels of recombination that you can imagine for the Drosophila, in this case, would be NER of the order of 0.4, something like that, which would be quite high.
For answer that question, actually, from looking at the simulations, which of these is stronger? Because they're both going to have, they will both, in some cases, have similar effects. And which is the source could not be determined, I don't think, from a time series. Yeah. I think it's a very hard question. I don't even know what it needs to answer that question.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that there is a parameter hiding in there, which is so you have some length introduced by mutation rate, recombination rate.
Yes.
Right? And then the question is, and you have a time set up by. Strength of selection, you know, over the logarithm of population,
the population size,
which is how long it takes to deterministically. And then the question is, how many during that time, how many mutations are going to come in into your sort of Hopper block?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, what is that number? Is that somehow a large number so that we're going to generate many new mutations during the time that my sort of clonal segment takes to fixate?
Yeah, that's exactly the point, that we needed to approximate as close as possible to the real situation with parameters of NR, N mu, NS, very close to what we assume is correct for, at least for Drosophila. And I am focusing all these results.
I'm thinking like a computer. I just have to know, you know how many new mutations are coming in. I know how long I have to run to see the significant so progress towards fixation of my favorite allele. And the simple question is, during that time, in a block of your sequence, which doesn't have time to recombine, how many new mutations do you get? And so, is it 5? Is it 100? I'm clueless. Is it 0.5?
Basically, what we have is N mu divided by NR, or the R to mu, close to unity, close to 1.
So roughly one new mutation will come in.
Yes. Yes.
No, it is not obviously, because it's also relative to the time for selection to take over. Right?
But this is very weak selection. Basically,
How do you actually measure theta in your...
Basically, you add all these parameters, you activate,
but
and 500 effective population size units later, you go and you check the equilibrium. The equilibrium level of polymorphism in that simulated sequence.
Theta is the polymorphism. It's just the number of different alleles that are segregating at each time?
No, well, it's the polymorphism based on a sample size equivalent to reasonable for population genetics. In this case, was 10 chromosomes in a sample of 1,000 chromosomes. The simulation was 1,000 chromosomes, and basically was sampling 10 chromosomes to investigate polymorphism and other parameters. And the theta is the average number of differences between two random chromosomes of this sample.
Ah, okay. Yes. So theta is basically pi. It's your observed.
Yeah, not exactly, but yes. Yeah. Yeah, the frequency spectrum was not very biased, and in this case, then theta and pi would be similar. Yes.
And selection, is that the preferred column is selected and will be on the side of freedom?
In this case, was a simple case with biallelic prefer going back and forth. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, we had the simulations indicate with qualitative results congruent with local Hill-Robertson effects. When we investigated the genome, we did observe, again, the predicted trends. we observe that the frequency of preferred codons actually decreases with the length of the coding sequence in Drosophila melanogaster, as predicted. A nicer way to look at this relationship between the length of a gene or the length of the coding sequence and the frequency of preferred codons is shown in this graph, where I add the recombination rate in different areas of the genome. And I like to show this graph because we do observe that the frequency of preferred codons decreases strongly with the length of the coding sequence in regions of reduced recombination. But the point here is that even in the regions with the highest recombination rate in Drosophila melanogaster, we do observe a significant reduction in the frequency of preferred codons when we increase the length of the coding sequence.
Is there any covariate with expression at all? Because you would think that if you want the protein to express at higher with high abundance, then there will be more selection for coding units.
Yeah, the general relationship between preferred codons and the length is independent of expression. We can do a partial correlation with it. Okay, the second prediction is also observed. Here I'm showing you the frequency of preferred codons for genes with basically no introns and with genes with many introns and very long introns. The longer the intronic sequence in a gene on average, the higher the frequency of preferred codons in a gene. And the third prediction, that was the heterogeneity along long exons, was also observed. And here I'm showing you the analysis of preferred codons in the 5' area of long exons, in the central area of long exons, and in the 3' area of long exons, with a reduction in the frequency of preferred codons in the center area, as predicted by the local Hill-Robertson effect and the U-shape distribution of the local Hill-Robertson effect. However, here one could argue that for whatever reason, the central area of coding sequences is subject to reduced or weaker selection, maybe associated with protein folding, etc. And the perfect way to test that possibility is to study genes with the same length of the coding sequence, but with centrally located introns. If this reduction was something associated with the central area of the amino acids in a protein, we should observe also a reduction. If it's the result of Hill-Robertson interference, basically the presence of an intron would reduce that interference and increase the frequency of preferred codons, and this is exactly what we observe.
So would that work better if you were actually looking at orthologs in different species of the same gene with and without an intron?
There are not that many, but yeah, that would be. But there are not many. Also, gaining or losing introns most likely will be associated with changes in expression. And the time to equilibrium for the new condition is so long that I think that I would be detecting the change towards equilibrium more than the actual predicted equilibrium. Yes. I don't see. But yeah, that's... Okay, we had simulations, we had genomic analysis congruent with this idea of local Hill-Robertson effect, but then I wanted to do kind of more experimental approach estimating the effectiveness of selection, now doing population genetics and applying what we discussed last week several times, I think 2 weeks ago even more, by applying the approach of comparing polymorphism and divergence to estimate gamma, to estimate the actual intensity of selection. Yes.
To your last slide, so these central introns, what would be the typical length scale of these introns that you were looking at?
We have everything. The average intron in Drosophila melanogaster will be 70-80. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have a high number of introns below 75, and then a long skew for long genes. But yes. Okay, to study the intensity of selection based on actual data, polymorphism and divergence, basically did kind of larger scale analysis of 100 genes in three different species, comparing two very discrete sets of genes. Genes with a short exon with introns, long exons, and long exon with introns, to actually test all these predictions. But here is the trick. When we apply polymorphism divergence to investigate gamma, we have in mind the idea that polymorphism is a function of mutation rate, population size, gamma, and the number of chromosomes under study, and we have a prediction of this a function of polymorphism according relative to gamma. We also have the prediction of divergence increasing rapidly with selection. And because both polymorphism and divergence are a function of mutation rate, we can get rid of this mutation rate that could be different genes on different sites by the ratio of polymorphism to divergence. This is a figure that we've seen many times now. The ratio of polymorphism to divergence as a function of selection or the selection intensity gamma. Focus that this function is depends on the effective population size. But the point is that we've been told many times, okay, let's assume that we have a neutral site or a neutral sequence. If we have these neutral sites, we can estimate RPD, the ratio polymorphism to divergence. And then, if I am studying synonymous mutations, preferred mutations are the ones that are expected to be beneficial from an unpreferred codon to a preferred codon. If I study only preferred mutations, I have an observed RPD for preferred mutations, and basically I look into the function and I can estimate gamma. But this requires RPD for neutral. This is a big if. And last week we discussed whether or not such a neutral RPD can be possible or is likely. One way, the way I propose to skip that nuisance is to investigate RPD for the deleterious mutations, the U's, and the RPD for the preferred mutations, the P's, at the same time. Because in this case, in this system of synonymous mutations, we know that the gamma, positive and negative, is expected to be the same. By investigating both at the same time, we can study what gamma basically defines the difference between the two RPDs. We don't need a neutral RPD anymore, a neutral control. We just can compare the RPDs for the preferred mutations and the unpreferred mutations, and from there estimate the gamma. And there is a single solution for any difference between RPDs. Yes? Question? Okay, and after all the experimental work is still not finished, we have some work in progress, but this is the result of several thousand sequences, basically with the predicted gammas with this approach I showed you before of not requiring the neutral expectation for the different sets of codons, of genes. Basically, all go in the direction that indeed we can detect in Drosophila melanogaster, at least in this system, differences in the efficacy of selection that are congruent with local Hill-Robertson effects at the level of single genes or even at the level of heterogeneity along long exons. Okay. And this is basically the idea of this study, is that we should not think in terms of a constant NEs in regions, even in regions of high recombination, but we should think in terms of variable NEs, the result of local Hill-Robertson effects that basically is highly heterogeneous along chromosomes according to the density of sites under selection, according to gene structure, exon length, etc., and gene densities, etc., etc. Of course, if we now think in terms of difference effective population size, caused by local Hill-Robertson effects. This has a direct implication on estimates of selection that we classically apply when we study selection with the McDonald-Kreiman framework or approach. And here I have kind of 5 or 6 slides or 7 slides showing how wrong most likely we are when we assume equivalent effective population sizes instead of introducing the difference, the idea that local Hill-Robertson effect changes. We could have a break now, or I can go. Yeah, 10 minutes, something like that. Okay. Okay, last week we already discussed that there are several problems with the McDonald-Kreiman approach. The choice of neutral sites, whether or not there is a neutral site in the complete genome, that's a big question. Also, demographic effects. Yes?
Clarify on that. So if I have polymorphism divergence ratio like a McDonald-Kreiman test, so this is for an E or divergence type. But people use McDonald-Kreiman for one single gene or one single locus. So in the approximation that an E doesn't fluctuate within one locus, this should be technically okay.
But these are my argument. I propose that this is wrong. Even for the same locus, we'll have 5' adjacent neutral sites that will be influenced by local Hill-Robertson effect. And even if we study a single exon, we can have differences in effective population size along that exon. I would say to the extreme, any site along a chromosome will have a different effective population size.
Is it right that this wouldn't bias the test? It would only inflate variance?
It would inflate variance, but in some cases it biases the test, and in a very clear direction. And I'll show you later the direction is of suggesting positive selection when there is no positive selection. That's the danger of applying the McDonald-Kreiman test under this approach and this scenario of Hill-Robertson effect. Okay. Let's remind the idea that if we have differences in effective population size, different regions of the chromosome or even regions of the same locus can have a level of polymorphism expected to be different even for neutral sites. Here I'm showing you the same graph than before, the predicted polymorphism for one area with effective population size and the same area or for an area now with a 50% effective population size. Polymorphism will be reduced, but for neutral sites, divergence is not going to be reduced. Yes?
A quick clarification point in the graph previously. I should have asked it the first time you showed it.
Yeah.
What X are you showing on that y-axis there? Is that the expected value of pi as a function of gamma or something?
The y-axis would be the expected theta, the expected number of polymorphic sites in a sample of 10 in this case.
Ah.
Yes.
And that's derived under this Poisson random field model or something, or what?
That's derived under the standard infinite Psi, Crow, Kimura, and all this stuff.
Yes.
This is the predicted difference in polymorphism when we reduce the effective population size. Divergence for neutral sites will not be influenced. For non-neutral sites will be influenced. But the bottom line is that if we have one area of a chromosome, let's assume this area here with nothing, no gene close to this area. We do predict an RPD equivalent to this one. If we now study a region that is with 50% effective population size, the predicted RPD definitely will be reduced. Of course, if I take these neutral sites as control, neutral sites in this area with half the RPD will look like under positive selection. If I take this area as control, neutral sites in this area will look like being under negative selection. That comparing RPDs in regions or even sites under different NE is a very dangerous thing to do, because it can bias in one direction, suggesting pervasive positive selection or suggesting a pervasive deleterious mutation. Then we investigated the consequences of basically mixing different effective population sizes when we study consequences of the McDonald-Kreiman approach to estimate gamma. But I want to show just three extreme cases. Here, we perform some computer simulations with a very high recombination rate, including given a gene conversion for Drosophila, levels of polymorphism for Drosophila, and we simulated cases with only deleterious mutations, changing from 2% of deleterious sites to 66% of deleterious sites. Deleterious sites here represented as black regions. And we estimated gamma applying the McDonald-Kreiman approach, the RPD approach, using as control the real neutral predictions, the ones that we know we introduced into the simulations and that the one that we observe when there is no selection going on. We observe that when there is very weak selection, when we study only deleterious mutations, we do recover negative gamma as predicted. But when we start adding some moderate selection, we do observe weak but pervasive, very, very weak but pervasive positive gamma, just as a consequence of the Hill-Robertson effect that these deleterious mutations have on the neutral adjacent sites. And to really think properly of what was going on in these simulations, we investigated gamma only for the neutral sites, the ones that we knew were the neutral sites, looking for the effects of the selected sites on these neutral sites. Basically, the prediction was that the selected sites would be reducing effective population size for the neutral ones, reducing RPD for the neutral ones, potentially mimicking positive selection. And this is exactly what we observe. When we study only neutral sites, we recover positive values for gamma. In other words, when we study cases with only deleterious mutations, and we study all the region, all the sites, we have very weak but pervasive positive selection, but very weak. But if we apply methods to remove those deleterious sites from the study, we would be moving from this area to this area, more dangerously now showing positive selection, because the neutral sites are the ones showing the signature of positive selection, because are influenced by linkage and by the Hill-Robertson effects. That's a case with only deleterious mutations. Then we investigated the same case with negative selection, but now adding some beneficial mutations, only 1% of beneficial mutations. When we study the positively selected sites, as expected, we observe gammas that are positive, less positive than the ones that we introduce, and this is the consequence of the interference between these positively selected sites. But again, when we study the neutral sites adjacent to these positively selected sites and deleterious sites, we recover gammas that are positive, are not that small. When we have situations with many deleterious sites and some beneficial mutations, the neutral sites embedded in these sequences will behave in terms of the McDonald-Kreiman, in terms of the RPD, as positively selected.
So why is this a possible effect? Because what you're saying is that the ground selection were hitchhiking and the positive selection was suppressed.
this would give you positive gamma estimate.
Yes, absolutely.
This, yeah, this is clear, but why locality is the problem here? If I have just absolutely uniform situation on the genome with, say, background selection suppressing my NE, then I would recover positive selection signal in my whole cranium. Or we're missing something here?
No, the idea is that you'll have clustered groups of sites under selection. And this is what can create a problem. And this basically does not require a strong selection. With weaker selection, you can generate, you could call it a small or weak hitchhiking effects or weak background selection effects. You can call it that, yes. But this, the point is that this is observed in situations with very high recombination, the high recombination even possible for Drosophila. And in the two previous cases, I show you possible effects of local Hill-Robertson effect of gammas. Based on the two previous slides, we've seen that the neutral sites will behave as positively selected. This predicts that when we study the fraction of adaptive evolution, that parameter that we've discussed several times last week and I think 2 weeks ago, the alpha, the fraction of adaptive evolution that can be estimated by doing a ratio of ratios, 1 minus the RPD for the region under a study or the sites under a study divided by the RPD predicted by a neutral site, and was proposed by Smith and Eriwalker in 2002. It's a measure of the excess divergence caused by positively selected sites. Well, when we study the observed alpha in a case with high recombination rate, moderate, weak selection, with some beneficial, but only 1% of beneficial mutations, and a different fraction of deleterious mutations, we will almost always overestimate alpha, and in some cases, substantially. Here I'm showing you the results of the ratio of the expected alpha divided by the true alpha that we know that is going on in the simulations for a case where we only have 1% of beneficial mutations, and in cases where we have 1% of beneficial mutations and 66% of deleterious mutations. We are observing that the estimated alpha is manifold, sometimes twice, three times, even 6.5 times larger than the real alpha. And this is caused by the, not necessarily by the sites under positive selection, by the neutral sites. The guilty sites here are the neutral sites showing the linkage effects of the selected sites, beneficial or deleterious. And these are danger. And of course, adding deleterious sites is not necessarily improving the behavior of the neutral ones, just reduce the number of the neutral ones. Yes.
Is that someone stated that the selective sweep carries along typically 7 amino acid substitutions? Is that sort of what that graph was trying to show us?
Yes. And yes, well, but even in high recombination rates, even with high recombination rates, and with even with moderate selection, with NS of 2 to 5, you can have linkage effect, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. Many of us apply tests like the Feyang-Bu, that is based on the linkage effects of beneficial mutation on adjacent ones, but then we apply formulas that assume that the beneficial mutations have no effects on the neutral ones. And that's exactly what I'm saying. If we assume that there is linkage effects, we should apply theory and models that take these linkage effects into account. Because the danger is that the bias would be in the direction of showing positive selection when there is less positive selection, or in some cases, no positive selection. That's the danger. And this effect can be also extrapolated to neutral sites adjacent to, let's call it, exons. The linkage effect is, it will be also observed. We can skip this one and go directly. We simulate, let's say, exons and neutral adjacent sequences. The linkage effect, the reduction in defective population size and polymorphism observed in these neutral sites will suggest positive selection when these sites, neutral ones, are very close to the sites under selection. And also higher alphas when there is no alpha at all here, because these sites would be completely neutral. This is the danger of not taking into account this. This basically would be a summary of things. Well, the McDonald-Kreiman approach has several problems, but linkage or local Hill-Robertson is potentially a big one. It can generate signatures of positive selection, inflate estimates of gamma and alpha. And basically, the bottom line is that there is a need to develop models taking into account things that we know exist. I think that that would be it.
What was, again, the order of magnitude of the variation in your effective parameter MP if you go across the
Is the variation in gammas and in E's and alphas is very, very high, yes.
In what order? How many percent does it vary in Drosophila?
The variation in E, the observed variation in E in Drosophila?
Across the chromosome. Yeah.
Well, if we go to the simulants. Yeah. Basically, we have, from it's on the order of 3-4 fold. It's a huge level of variation that is not accounted for, just differences in recombination rate that could be influenced by local Hill-Robertson gene densities, etc. No. You cannot do that, but basically, by looking at the level of polymorphism, the variation in the level of polymorphism, this would be neutral polymorphism. We can have a sense of how variable. But I bet that if this study had been done at a smaller scale, at the scale of individual genes, adjacent areas, etc., etc., we would see a huge level of variation in any.
But in humans, I guess it's completely different.
I won't go there. Yeah.
What?
You have anything changing there. You have base composition changing, you have mutation rate changing, you have the CpG. It's way.
The linkage block.
Also, you have linkage block. The NMEO is maybe one order of magnitude smaller, meaning that the Hill-Robertson effects are expected to be weaker because the distance between any two mutations segregated in the population will be longer, etc. Et
much less signature of positive selection, has been found, right?
That too. The alphas estimated in humans are smaller than the ones estimated in Drosophila, etc. Yes.
What is the gigantic spike in the
combination? These rates of crossing over are the cumulative results of many different labs, many different strains.
Nowadays it's fashionable to find positive selection. Do people want to hear this message that you're saying?
I've seen some papers where, there were numbers in there that I thought were insane, where there were numbers with 90% of the substitutions is on the positive selection, something I've seen in the paper. I think a little bit of reality would be warranted.
Yeah, I would agree with this assessment. Yes?
Do you think one of the problems is that I came in late. but you mainly investigated this by forward simulation, and maybe there's some reluctance to take those messages seriously in the absence of knowing how to do this analytically.
Yeah, I agree. I think that quiescent simulation, for instance, is so efficient for so many things. That when you start discussing results from forward simulations, you have a sense of that this is a kind of second-order approach.
But if you look at real population sizes that might be billions and effective population sizes that might be thousands, there's orders of magnitude reduction there that has to be explained by one reason or another, right? When some of it is this and some of it is deem structure or, you know, local extinction of deems or something, right? So, I mean, what's the main reason why there's an order of magnitude, several orders of magnitude smaller effective population size than the real population size?
Your guess, the general approach is, I would go with the linkage explanation. Of course, linkage, draft.
You know, you can go down from billions to thousands, can you, by this or not?
I don't think that you can reduce orders of magnitude with this Hill-Robertson effect or local Hill-Robertson.
Why is it 10,000 effective population size of humans if we're billions of real humans?
Well, now there are billions of real humans, right? I mean, there weren't 100,000 years ago.
Well, even if you, maybe 20,000 years ago, 100,000
units. I mean, a population size of 10 to the 6 has been subsidized even more.
It's crazy,
It's surprising. Everybody who has walked through a forest in the right region of the world,
there are a million.
Lies around himself.
but there is just geographic isolation, right? I mean, every fly doesn't fly to the other end of the world to find a mate, right? The world is many, many times bigger than what one fly can fly. No?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'm. So population structure is more important than this, just on a quantitative.
Well, I would say that linkage, in terms of or the pseudo-hitchhiking draft, definitely can play a role when you incorporate strong selection. And when we incorporate the cumulative effects of weak and moderate selection, you could reduce even more the effective population size, or relative to the actual population size. And then you add all the demographic effects and all this stuff. Thank you.